Speaker, the, this executive order does not set up a board of directors or any kind of independent management of this function.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Commissioner, I recognize this executive order doesn't do that, but the piece of legislation that is being worked on at this time does, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, Mr. Chairman, yes, Madam Speaker, the ultimate concept, I'm going to back up one step and say that I can tell you that from the involvement of the Department of Administration, we thought that consolidating leasing and public facilities is the right thing to do for the right reasons, regardless of anything else that were to come after. And absolutely, there's going to have to be a lot of discussion and debate with regard to what incremental next step there is. Envisioned, as is, you know, in sort of this broad concept that we would have if it were to happen, would be that we could, in fact, manage our public facilities in a real cost-benefit situation where it would not only be deferred maintenance, but yes, programs and departments would be do cost accounting on the leases, the amount of space that they have, their overhead costs. So that would be envisioned as being part of the responsibility of this separate entity. Is that, is that responsive?
It was responsive.
Any questions of the commissioner?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one final comment from our part. We did, in fact, put on hold, pending this executive order, major changes in the way we would go about performing the leasing function in this interim basis. There's a lot that needs to be done in this area, and one of the things is, many of you may recall from last year, there was discussion about buying buildings as opposed to continuing to lease buildings and to get a better rate for the overhead of these agencies and programs. And it was as we explored that option that it became increasingly apparent that it was difficult for us to pursue flexibility and alternatives for acquiring space under the current structure. Just one more time, we think that this is a make sense move to look at public facilities as a combined effort, and certainly if this does not happen, it's going to take a significant amount of time for us to go back and see what we can do. We're back at square one in terms of looking at management changes to get the most out of our overhead dollars.
Mr. Chairman, I do have one follow-up. Madam Commissioner, could you tell me who's envisioned a certain...
Mr. Chairman, Madam Speaker, to be frank with you, I think it's at a conceptual stage. The answer to your question, as far as I can answer, is I don't know. I mean, I would be guessing if I sat down and said I would presume members of the public who had some background in these areas, as well as some officials, not unlike the composition of some of the other boards. And that's my recollection from early discussions about what this legislation would look like. But I haven't personally seen the latest iteration of that proposal. Again, we think this is a standalone, this executive order is a standalone, make sense piece, regardless of any future proposals that might come down with regard to these issues.
Any further discussion with the commissioner? Representative Navarro.
We definitely encourage the legislature to take a look at the whole leasing and deferred maintenance problem.
Absolutely. I can tell you frankly that the executive branch alone is not currently doing a very good job the way it's done now. And we have to look at structurally changing the way these programs are designed in order to be responsive to it, because we keep slapping Band-Aids on it and we're into an artery.
Where does the executive branch get the funding to take care of deferred maintenance?
From the legislature, Representative Navarro.
The other question.
Mr. Chairman, so I just please say we proceed. Share responsibility. Also, I just wanted to, not for the commissioner, I'll say it after. And that is that on Representative Barnes' position paper, she says that the Department of Transportation repeatedly ignored desires and mandates of the legislature regarding budget reductions in the capital budget last year. The legislature did exactly what you're accusing the department of doing at our request. It was a legislative mandate to use CIP receipts.
Mr. Chairman, since I've been sitting at this table, it's been brought to my attention that there was a reappropriation in the other body that allowed the $1.5 million to go back into that category. And I guess I'm a bit astounded that when we work very hard to clean up some of this, that after the conference committee on the budget is ceased, that somehow a reappropriation of $1.5 million got put back in. It's about enough to make you want to be sick to your stomach.
Did we have anyone else in the audience who want to be heard on this executive order at this time? We will close kind of the public hearing and take up the committee hearing at this time. Representative Brown?
Thank you. I just wanted to ask, how did a reappropriation occur after the budget was closed?
I sure would like to know that myself.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Parnell.
Mr. Chairman, I came in here with several questions, most of which have been answered already, but it really boils down to, for me, to two issues. One is whether we are going to have a cost savings, and two, it comes down to accountability for the funds. Representative Barnes and Representative Grusendorf have both addressed the issues related to accountability, and I share their concerns. With cost savings, I have to share Representative Hanley's view that, generally speaking, in the abstract, a consolidation is going to equal a savings. But I don't think that that should necessarily carry the day. I think we need more information or projections demonstrating the projected cost savings. I was interested, about 20 minutes ago or 30 minutes before the hearing started, we got this packet of information that says that the information listed below is available, a business plan, a merger impacts analysis, FY93 budget analysis, et cetera. And I've requested my staff to get a hold of those documents from Kit. But when Kit Duke was responding to Representative Hanley's question about what the projected savings would be, I really didn't get a sense that there was an answer at this point, because perhaps because not enough study had been done, or I guess my observation is that I almost think the executive order is premature at best, and I just have some real concerns about whether we will experience cost savings, whether we're going to take ourselves into another morass. So I just have some concerns, and if Kit has some follow-up to that, I'd be happy to hear it. I'm open to that, but that's where I'm coming from.
Ms. Duke, did you hear the question? Any follow-up?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I think...
if you could have a seat, please.
I think while it is true that we can't come in here and tell you we can save $239,000, that we have done enough study to be able to demonstrate to ourselves that we can gain efficiencies. And I don't believe that we will be able to give you hard and fast information until we have been able to do some of this, until we have been able to put people together and see what kind of work productivity you can get, because it is an issue not so much of eliminating positions. I don't think that is it at all. It's of trying to get more work out of the resources that we have in the budget. We spend roughly $65 million a year on our state-owned buildings for maintenance and operations expense. A large part of that is operations. But a significant amount of it is maintenance, probably 40% maybe is maintenance activity of that money on average. And I think that what we're trying to do is to show you, demonstrate to you that we can get more for the dollars that are being spent. I wish that we could come in here and say exactly this is what's going to happen, but I don't think that's going to be possible until you have been through a complete cycle of a year's worth of operation under this new consolidated management effort. And I do expect that our organization is going to be accountable. It is one of the reasons why we think an authority is important, because we believe that accountability is going to be key to the success of this effort. And if I could, I would like to clarify that the sinking fund, as Speaker Barnes refers to it, is not expected to operate outside of legislative purview. We don't expect that those funds would be independent of legislative action. It is true that the rent money would, we are proposing that the rent money in the legislation would be appropriated to the agencies and then paid to this new organization. And the sinking fund then allows you to carry the money that is for repair and major maintenance beyond the end of fiscal year. The majority of the money, of course, would be spent for routine yearly maintenance and operations expenses, but there is a certain portion of it that must be carried forward if you are to plan for major maintenance and repair activity. And that's the purpose of the so-called sinking fund.
Any further questions? Well, I was just going to ask Carol here, so I'll say it out loud. Executive Order 87 is in the Transportation Committee itself. Has it been scheduled for a hearing there, and does it have any other committee referrals?
I don't believe it's been scheduled for hearing, and where the next committee of referral.
Okay. Representative Brown.
Thank you. I'm just trying to understand the leasing part of it. We wouldn't be doing maintenance and repair on leased buildings, would we?
Only if our contract calls for that.
And the Department of Administration in the last several budget cycles has been attempting to save money from leasing by looking carefully when the things turn over and so forth, and they did not achieve the level of savings they hoped to. I'm just trying to understand, how is the actual rent that's paid affected at all by where the function's performed?
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, Representative Barnes, I don't believe that it would. I mean, the executive branch would still have a focus on an effort to save money in the leasing arena.
Further questions? I have one or two here in regards to our procedures. The time frame, an executive order becomes law unless it's approved, and what is that date?
60 days.
Yeah, but what is the final date, do we know?
March
11th.
We table the resolution till March 11th.
my next question, and I'm trying to work through the process to try to determine exactly where we're at here today, Madam Speaker. If the executive order itself is still within the House Transportation Committee, I know it passed the House State Affairs Committee, I think, with 5 due passes. What is the process of the executive order working through the committee system? What is to be obtained there, just educating the legislature or
representing?
Actually, the governor has to introduce them, but we don't have to do anything with those. If we want to let them go through, we don't do anything. If we want to disprove them, we introduce a resolution, and that's what we're going to apply.
So my point then was basically to proceed on House Special Concurrent Resolution, let me recognize the speaker.
When I referred those executive orders to those particular committees, it was just so the legislature could become knowledgeable in what they contained. At some point, if you wish to overturn one, you have to introduce the resolution, and actually, it could have been sent, the one to overturn it, just directly to rules, because that is the only place where, by law, a hearing has to take place, is in the Rules Committee. And that Rules Committee must be joint, meeting of both the House and Senate. I chose so that there would be a broader understanding. as far as this one goes, to send it also to finance, so members of the body would have a better opportunity to inform themselves of just exactly what was in this. But as far as sending those executive orders to other committees, those were simply informational purposes for the members of those committees, and to pass it out whether do pass or do not pass doesn't mean anything, because do pass means that I don't really know what it means, because you let it die in 60 days. You just simply don't take any action.
I just wanted to make sure that in scheduling this for a hearing that we weren't being premature, or we weren't exempting or overclimbing any other committee.
You were not, because truly, I could have chosen again not to send this anywhere except to the Rules Committee, because that is the only proper purview for a hearing, is a joint House-Senate Rules Committee.
Okay, so what we have before us then is House Special Concurrent Resolution Number 2 to disapprove Executive Order 87. And Executive Order 87 is by the Governor to move state facility leasing and management functions from the Department of Administration and other agencies to the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. What action does the committee wish? Representative Hoffman.
With the resolution and accompanying fiscal notes with individual recommendations.
Are there any objections to Representative Hoffman's motion? Any objections? Hearing none, then so ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, members of the committee, very much.
Next item, we have House Bill 101. This bill was passed out of Labor and Commerce with 5 due pass recommendations on February the 15th and referred to the Finance Committee. House Bill 101 was requested by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers to assure the state's adoption of a minimum electrical safety standard for the state as set out by the American National Standards Institute. Do we have anyone who wishes to be heard on House Bill 101? And then we will move the discussion to the committee. What action does the committee wish in regards to House Bill 101? Representative Grusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Move House Bill 101 out with individual recommendations.
Okay, we have a motion to move House Bill 1 out of committee with individual recommendations. Are there any discussions? Hearing none, are there any objections?
Zero.
Hearing none, then House Bill 101 has moved from committee with individual recommendations. Before I move on to the next
Chairman,
one.
And the zero fiscal note.
And the zero fiscal, and the accompanying zero fiscal note. Make sure that's into the record. Does anyone object to moving it with the zero fiscal note? Hearing none, then the fiscal note moves. I have a request here from Chairman McLean to waive House Bill 78. Through the House Finance Committee. House Bill 78 is relating to the testimony of children in certain criminal proceedings. The bill has a zero fiscal note and is supported by the Department of Law. And under current law, in a criminal proceedings involving a child victim or witness, the court can order that the testimony of the child be taken by closed circuit television or through one-way mirrors if it determines that the child's testimony under normal court procedures would result in the child's inability to effectively communicate. This bill will allow the courts to extend the privilege to children to the age of 16, up from the current age of 13. Now, what I'm going to ask is that any members of the committee object to this bill being waived, that they let me know before session on Wednesday. And if I do not hear from anyone before session on Wednesday at that time, then I will stand up and ask that House Bill 78 be waived from committee. And now then I would like to move to House Bill 135, which is the supplemental budget. And we had move down through the Department of Health and Social Services to Commerce and Economic Development. We have Ms. Fresca here with us today. If you would come forward, please. And before we start with Commerce and Economic Development, if anyone have any questions on anything that we have gone through so far. This is the overview at this time. It's my intent, of course, to ask each of the subcommittee chairmen to look at the requests and the supplementals and to let me know if they agree or disagree with those requests when we bring this bill then back before the committee. In other words, it would be our objectives then to work on the supplemental bill before the full committee. And when we walk our way back through, like when we start with the Department of Administration, I do have the Department of Administration, and I will give the full committee my recommendations at those at that time then, and we can discuss them. We'll go through the same with each of the agencies. So is there any questions then on administration, law, revenue, education, health and social services, before we go on to commerce and economic development? Hearing none, Carol?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Where we left off from last time, I think, was section 20, starting with section 28 on page 6, which is an appropriation of $196,300 to ASME. This will serve as part of their match for increased level of federal funds for their marketing in foreign, their advertising, promoting products in foreign markets. And it is related to section 29. Between the two, it will provide a sufficient match for these federal funds. Section 29 extends the lapse date on an encumbrance that they have from an FY92 appropriation, and they expect that to make available about $60,000. So they're related.
Any questions? Next.
Okay, thank you. Section 30 provides $90,000 to the Veterans Death Gratuity Program. This is basically formula funded in the sense of as an application comes in, the department has been paying it. They expect an increase above what they have budgeted this year, which is $270,000. And this will fully fund the program for the remainder of the fiscal year.
Are there any questions?
Section 31 provides $6 million for fire suppression costs. This is added to the about $2 million that the legislature provided last session for this purpose. And included in the $6 million is about $3 million that would be for in case there is a fire during the spring season.
Any questions? Representative
Henry. How much do we actually owe that has been encumbered but not paid on for fire suppression?
There's about $3.6 million in fixed costs for the full fiscal year. The department could provide you with those details. They are here in Frenchy, who does a lot of the work up in the northern area of the state. He's also here if you'd like to find out more about the fixed costs and how that works. Frenchy a lot.
I'm okay, right. I'll okay. Get, if I could just get that.
Yeah, there's in the backup, there is information about a narrative about where we are, what we expect to be reimbursed from the federal government, and how the supplemental needs determined. So there is some detail on that.
Representative Terrell?
Yes, Cheryl, you made it sound like we're appropriating money here for a fire that might happen before the new fiscal year. Is that in fact so, or we're covering costs, both fixed costs and actual suppression costs that we have to date?
Both. You're correct. It's for both. It covers our some of the costs from last season, as well as what the fixed costs are now, plus in case we have a fire in the spring. And if we don't have any fires, then these funds would lapse into the general fund.
Any further questions? Representative Rusendorf.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. Cheryl, beginning of this year, there was a letter that was sent by the governor talking about emergency funds. And, of course, there was no emergency. It was just maybe a fire might break out. Is this the same monies that we're really talking about now?
Yes. I mean, this is the funding that's necessary to meet the obligations to date and in case we do have fires for the rest of the year.
So after legislative budget nodded, met, and other discussions, it was not transferred over as emergency funds, and you went through this mechanism then?
Well, this, Madam Chairman, Representative Grusdorf, this is similar to the mechanism that has been used for the last 2 years where the emergency declaration was declared. The administration then came in for a supplemental request in order to satisfy the relationship there. Okay. So this is similar to that.
Would you continue, please?
Section 32 provides $641,000 for the land selection program. These are increased costs that the department incurred as a result of expediting the land selection process. Basically, with the anticipated and change in the administration at the federal level, the governor made the decision to speed up this project. And as a result, they have basically expended the current year authorized budget on land selection activities. And these additional funds would be necessary for the rest of the fiscal year.
Number 33?
Yes. Okay. Section 33 is expanding the scope of a 1989 capital project grant. Administratively, we do have some latitude to do this. In this case, we chose not to authorize expanding the scope. This project, when it was appropriated, before there was a legislative appropriation, it was for the relocation of a facility, a building for a handicapped ski school. The department came back and said that the grantee would like to change it to be design and engineering work. We felt that because the legislature had originally appropriated this money, it would be beneficial for them to make the decision if it was okay to expand the scope and change the nature of it. So that's why we included it in this bill, so that you could act on it as opposed to us doing it.
Okay, any questions? I just had one, and sorry I had to be absent for a minute. If I could move back up then on that $6 million fire suppression cost in 91 and 92. Those dollars have already been expended. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, not all of them. Included in that $6 million is about $3 million for potential fires this next season. So if we did not have those fires, that money would lapse into the general fund.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any questions then down to 33?
Okay, 34 is Division of Boards. This is $492,000 that is related to implementation of the subsistence legislation from last session. As some of you may recall, when you did have the special session and you enacted the bill, there was no vehicle to fund fiscal notes. And at that time, the department did provide a fiscal note. It was for a little bit less, but they did provide a fiscal note, but there was no mechanism to fund it. So the only opportunity we have is through a supplemental appropriation request.
So. Representative Hanley?
Off the top of your head, do you know how much less the fiscal note was than the 492?
The fiscal note was for $365,000.
Okay, number 35.
Mr. Chairman, on that.
Representative Hoffman.
Why at this point are you asking for the additional $130,000-some?
The department indicates that they've had to have a lot more. Most of this money is going for increased board meetings, et cetera, and that they have had to have a lot more board meetings than they originally anticipated at the time they prepared the fiscal note last session. Part of it's related to a Department of Law decision that when they change one regulation, that it requires relooking at all regulations, so that's caused a lot more meetings.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, section 35.
Okay.
Section 35 is for the Division of Subsistence. It's $8,000, which usually is below OMB's minimums to put before the legislature, but this is related again to implementation of the subsistence legislation. But originally the division was looking for about, I think it was $55,000 as far as their request, and we told them to go back and relook at their budget to see, as well as with the Division of Boards, to see how they could accommodate some of that increase, and this is the part that they were unable to cover within existing resources.
Any questions? Section 36?
36 is $84,300 for Fish and Game to pay vendor payments for the sale of King Salmon tags. This is new legislation that did pass last session. Should have been funded through a fiscal note, but apparently there was an error in not getting the fiscal note into the process. The legislation provides that vendor payments shall be made from the general fund. And as a result, right now there is no money in the budget to make these payments back to the vendors.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanley?
You said the legislation provides that it is general fund?
Correct.
So it's not out of the fees from the King Salmon?
No. The fees from the sale of the King Salmon tags go back into the Fish and Game fund, but specifically the statute says the vendor payments shall come from the general fund.
Any other questions? 36.
37 is 37. To Fish and Game to ratify and amend prior year expenditures. And this is similar to what we looked at last time I was here in the Department of Education. These are some old appropriations that basically have still negatives on the books. Each one's an individual case. Sometimes it's just a wrong coding, a human error, and there is no other way to correct these old errors than to go through this process. And you'll see it for a couple of the departments in an effort to clean up the books, so to speak.
Okay, next.
Section 38 is a similar situation, except that these are unrealized federal receipts from a 1987 capital project for sports fisheries, public access acquisition. And this appropriation is being corrected by another appropriation out of the Fish and Game Fund, the 134.7, in order to cover the earlier expenditure, but then the federal receipts weren't received to equal it out.
Okay, any question on any of those or anything in Fish and Game, Representative Blackburn and Henley?
Did we not comply with the law, or why weren't these projects eligible for those funds?
Mr. Chairman, I'd have to ask the department why they weren't eligible, but apparently they had a mixture of funding, and each of the type of federal funds had a different match requirement. And in looking back, in trying to recreate the history, it looks like they just simply didn't do as good of a job in coding the right amounts to the right appropriations. But if you'd like, the department, Mary Lou Burton, could possibly explain what was going on to the best that she's been able to reconstruct. Would you like her to do that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
For the record, I'm Mary Lou Burton, the fiscal officer for Fish and Game. Cheryl Frasca explained it correctly. This CIP is made up of a number of projects, all of which have different matching requirements. The CIP was for Dingell Johnson funds, which are 75% federal funds, 25% state funds. And the CIP right off the top was not, it was $200,000 as opposed to $1 million federal funds. So we didn't have the 25% to begin with. That doesn't excuse losing track of what general funds were available for the match. But the projects had a number of different match requirements. Some of them even had in-kind match. Some of them were subject to dispute after the fact. And it wasn't until legislative audit came in 1990 that just realized that they had lost track and hadn't computed the state match correctly.
Okay, any other questions?
What happens if these dollars aren't approved?
Through the chair. Nothing happens. These monies are gone. These are general fund dollars that were expended since 1987 up through the period of 1990. This actually will replace those monies that were spent out of the general fund with fish and game fund dollars.
So we still have a negative on the books?
We still have a negative on the books, yes, I'm sorry. We do remain with this negative forever and ever and ever. There's no other way to correct it. We either have to apply general funds to it or do what we're proposing here, which is to take fish and game funds.
Any other questions? Okay, next we move on to Department of Public Safety, and is correct, I was to assume that you were withdrawing all of these requests?
We don't fool around. They carry guns, those guys.
I had a good SWAX reaction out of that.
Okay, Section 39 is for public safety. It's for contract jail. And the appropriation amount, $690,000. This is for increased operating costs to meet the contracts as they've been negotiated. We've in our 94 operating budget, we've attempted to provide a funding level so we don't have to have a supplemental again next year. I think if you go back and look historically, this is a program that has not had enough funds each year and has been in supplemental mode. But we're trying to get out of that, trying to meet the obligations.
How do we do the contracting? Do we contract with, say, a city for a year, or do we contract a number of prisoner days, or?
Yeah, they are annual contracts, I believe, and the deputy commissioner has been very involved in setting up a task force on this issue because costs keep going up. I'm sure he could give you an explanation as to what the terms of those contracts are. They vary.
Okay, maybe if we could. I know that's a question I've been asked several times, and I haven't had the answer. Mr. Swackhammer, welcome back to House Finance.
If this isn't what goes around, comes around. Mr. Chairman, my name is C.E. Swackhammer, Deputy Commissioner of Public Safety. On the contract jails, they are negotiated on a yearly basis, and they began in the FY year. We hope to have them signed by June. To this effort, Cheryl was right that historically they have been in a supplemental mode for years and years, and the problems date back to the late 70s. And we're in hopes that we get a handle on this over between now and the time that we're back before you in October. But the state is not in a good position simply because prisoners are state mandated by statute that is state responsibility, and those municipalities that do contract with the state, not held hostage, but basically there's been a lot of disagreement about what fair costs are, and the chiefs have been very responsive in trying to work towards a solution to this problem. They see that it's not going to go away, so we hope not to be in this mode next year.
Representative Parnell and then Hoffman.
Mr. Swackhammer, just to follow up on Representative Larson's question, because I haven't seen these contracts myself, but could you tell us what is the price based on? Is it prisoner day? I mean, how do you determine the contract price?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Parnell, they're not actually based upon prisoner days, but it does come into the equation in terms of looking at various contracts. Basically, there are fixed costs for each one of the municipalities that do provide this service. And probably during the subcommittee process, we'll probably get to know a lot more about this than everyone.
I have been. Mr. Swackhammer, I guess the kind of where I'm going with this is, are there variables in the contracts that we're not aware of at budget time that require you to keep coming back for supplementals, or are the contracts fixed? Let me help you out here. It could be something as simple as we don't enter the contract till June and we budget in March or April, and that may be the simple way out of it. Mr. Bischoff, would you like to respond to this? He's raising his hand behind you.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Ken Bishaw, Admin Services Director, Department of Public Safety. Representative Parnell, get it on that. We don't negotiate the contracts until sometime in June. Sometimes later, depending on how it is in negotiations. No, and I believe this last round of the contracts we didn't have completed until late in the fall. So we don't really know what the total amount is quite some time. So all we do is when we submit the budget, give it our best shot. That's what you see before you.
Any further, Representative Hoffman?
Yeah.
Well, for the most part, though, the contracts that you enter into are a lot less expensive per man day than what the state incurs in their own prisons. Isn't that correct?
Chairman, in some instances, yes, and in some instances, quite a bit higher. They vary as high as $200 a day as compared to some other facilities that are under $100 a day.
What would generally be the reason for the cost, the remote locations or the low number of prisoners compared to?
Mr. Chairman, that's both. Basically, you have a place like Unalaska where one round trip ticket costs $1,000. And other places in looking at man days has to do with the number of prisoner days. But they're here again, the municipalities are forced with some certain fixed costs. And a lot of these problems are driven by the facility themselves. Some are not conducive to, for instance, using dispatchers to monitor the prisoners that, because of facility, they have to have full-time jailers.
Any other questions on this point then? Thank you. We can move off of contract jails then on to section 40.
Sure, there'll be others. Section 40 is $90,600 for the criminal records and identification. This is for the Alaska Automated Fingerprint Identification System, situation is a significant backlog on processing fingerprints and other criminal histories as a result of an increased use of this system. The legislature's passed laws in the last couple of years about requiring applicants for teacher certification, other activities, to have their fingerprints run through the system, and as a result, the department's not been able to keep up with that increased workload. OMB, we certainly put the department through the drill about demonstrating the need for this, and they actually convinced us for what that's worth. And it started out about $150,000, and we're down to the $90,000 as far as what we're submitting to you. So we became convinced that it was important enough to keep that system up to try to get it up to date to ensure that a full picture is there for the criminal justice agencies.
Any questions? 41.
41 is bloodborne pathogens, compliance costs. We talked about this as it related to health and social services the other day. This is also for the department to come into compliance. It's for the disposable gear as well as the vaccines, and they have about $700 to do a training video. So it's pretty much the disposable gear and the vaccine costs for this.
42.
Prisoner transportation, $125,000. This is, again, one of those kind of like contract jails, usual supplemental each year because the prior year's funding doesn't get increased based on last year's supplemental, I think is what we've gotten into, a stepping stone kind of situation. And again, these are the costs of moving state charged prisoners between correctional facilities and to out-of-state prisons.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Parnell.
Mr. Bishop, perhaps you're the one to address this. How much of the $125,000 has already been spent, or is this projected need for the rest of the fiscal year?
Mr. Chairman, to answer Representative Parnell's question, this is probably similar to the question as far as suppression. We're spending at a certain rate to provide the transport, and by the end of the year, we've spent $4 million, and we're short about $125,000 of the full million that we need.
Most of the costs in air transportation? Do we buy any halfway tickets?
Frequent flyer mileage?
Actually, Mr. Chairman, the fire department does, in fact, buy advanced tickets when they're available. That's one.
I said halfway tickets.
Halfway tickets?
Yes.
One-way tickets?
No, halfway. Up, but not down.
Next question.
43
is for an arbitration settlement for Fish and Wildlife Protection.
Could you tell us just a little bit about it?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, this is an arbitration related to an employee involved with an off-duty controlled substance. Lost a case in this nature, and the policy is being revisited as we speak in terms of coming up with an off-duty policy with our drug-free workplace requirements.
Any other questions?
Yeah, just is that a, I mean, was this a one-year thing or just over a number of years? The employee was received compensation, obviously, of $101,000.
It's from September 6, 91 to June 30, 93 is what the calculation of this dollar amount is based on.
Are there any appeals from an arbiter's decision?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that would be an AG's decision whether it would be worth pursuing. I know that the arbitration provides for if there's any workers' compensation collected or the person finds interim employment, the award will be reduced if there's been subsequent.
44.
Mr. Chairman, this is $125,000 for the Civil Air Patrol for aircraft maintenance and operations costs. There is an itemization in your backup that describes what these additional dollars are for.
Any questions? Representative
Could Hammett? I ask one that may or may not be here? I read in the paper where there was a settlement, either Department of Law or Public Safety, with a gentleman in Quinnahawk, Representative Hoffman's district, for $7 million, and I was just curious. I semi-expected to see that in the supplemental. Are you familiar with that case or whether it was actually settled or not?
Chairman, it's my impression it was settled. It came out of risk management, but I'm not positive on that. Ken, do you know? I believe that would be risk management. We could get a definite answer.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that because I'm curious why we've got certain types of settlements that have to be appropriated by the legislature and then a $7 million, because I had some questions to ask about it. It was a fairly well-publicized case, and for a $7 million settlement, it didn't go to court. I had some concerns, and that's why I asked the question as to whether it was going to be in a supplemental or not.
Mr. Bishop? Shed some light on that. Certain things are managed in the state's risk management program. Certainly, deaths in a jail or any kind of death like that, according to the State Department Administration, their risk management program is a $5 million deductible. We've got a couple of layers of high-risk premiums over the top of that to kick in for these kinds of liabilities. Or arbitration in terms of the decision regarding employment is not an insurance issue. It's an employer-employee type issue, so that would not be the state's insurance program.
Any other questions? Okay, we go down to 45.
Mr. Chairman, Section 45 is another arbitration decision, this time related to DOT. It's for the payment of overtime for on-site construction engineers. And it's 539.6 in CIP receipts. And again, this goes back to June of 1991 through September 15th, 1992.
Any Representative Henley?
Well, I'm just curious how that works. I mean, is there money left in that particular capital project lines for this, obviously? Or is this going to take away from, are we going to have to now, we're going to be short in the capital projects that these were involved in?
Mr. Chair, Bob Bartholomew, you can answer that.
And construction engineers are paid on an hourly basis?
For the record, my name is Bob Bartholomew with Administrative Services, Department of Transportation. The chairman's question, the engineers are not eligible under the federal law for overtime. They're paid basically 37.5-hour wage. It's been the practice of the department and the state since the early 70s that since during the construction season they work anywhere from 60 to 80 hours a week. There are administrative policies where they had been paid straight time overtime for all hours worked in excess of 37.5. In 1991, under Commissioner Keller, that policy was reviewed, and the administration adopted a new policy where people who were not eligible for overtime under federal law would come under the policy that they wanted some professional time uncompensated to be provided. The policy that the Department of Transportation implemented was the Department of Administration's policy that said the hours worked between 37.5 hours a week and 50 would not be compensated. That would be just normally included in your base to get the job done. Hours in excess of 50 up to 72, which they considered, you know, unreasonable to not be compensated for, you would be compensated for those hours. That was challenged by the union and taken to an arbitrator who ruled that basically you couldn't change that past practice or state policy except at the negotiating table. So they awarded the overtime.
Was that for all hours back down to 37.5?
That was. So every hour.
Are the same engineers then during the off construction season, are they laid off or do we pay them for 37.5 hours, whether we have enough work for them or not to do at that time?
The policy of the department is if there's not work for them in the off season, then they are laid off. And if there's continuing work, then they're kept on.
Any further questions?
Yeah, you didn't answer mine actually, but before we go into that, I had one quick question on the. Go ahead and answer. I had asked if it was going to be taken out of the capital projects and was there enough to finish the capital projects.
And how this is for personal services costs, which for state employees who work on capital projects, we do include in our operating budget the CIP receipts to fund their personal services. They also are funded out of a capital appropriation, but by law we're required to include all employees in our operating budget. We have paid the arbitrator's settlement. The employees, we had to pay them within a certain amount of days or incur penalty pay. So the amount of supplemental that we're asking for is to replace CIP personal service authorization that was in our FY93 budget that we've paid to incur costs that were covered from 1991 and 1992. So without the supplemental, we would be short in our FY93 budget of being able to do the CIP work on capital projects.
I'm still unclear, but I guess I can get more information because it's appropriated from CIP receipts.
And what that means, in our operating budget, we had X million dollars of authorization to spend personal services in FY93. And in the last 2 years, we've spent almost, 100% of that authorization. Now, out of our 93 budget, we had to pay an arbitrator's settlement
right.
of $539,000. So we'll get we get receipts in project from projects to pay for the revenue, but we have an authorization expenditure ceiling that funds the activities, and we anticipate the activities to fully spend the authorization that was budgeted in 1993, but we've also then paid this supplemental out of it and would not be able to do all the work that's been planned if we don't replace that supplemental, I mean, replace the money that we spent for the arbitrator's settlement.
One quick question. You had said, and I understand the reasoning, that you can't go back. It has to be at the negotiating table. Was the original policy done at the negotiating table, or was this a policy adopted by administration?
My understanding from what our history showed is it was a policy not negotiated at the table. It was a policy adopted in 1978. And the practice had been going on since the early 70s. It was formalized in 78. And the arbitrator did take it out of administrative policy and put it into labor relations.
Are these construction engineers, are they exempt or non-exempt employees?
They are classified employees, range 16 and range 18, and they're the field engineers who are actually out in the field monitoring the contractor's work. They are under the Fair Labor Standards Act, not eligible for overtime. They'd be considered, I think it's called supervisory or above the level that federal law mandates overtime.
See, that was kind of my question. If they're compensated at a higher level than the hourly workers, are not then under this, they'd be compensated twice at a higher level plus at overtime.
And it's a matter of interpretation. I mean, they are paid an hourly wage. That's how the state's pay scale works. Yeah. And so they there's a set wage for the engineer associates, but they take that, they divide it by 37.5, and they pay them an hourly wage.
Are these for workers more or less on remote-type jobs?
It's remote-type jobs, and it actually happens in Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks at a large rate. If it depends. There's some ability to manage contracts more in the bigger municipalities, and they may not work 7/10s or 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. But depending on the weather and the schedule, if they're hitting a deadline, then even in the larger cities, they'll work 7 days a week.
Okay, we got about 8 minutes at the most here to finish today, so we'll go as far as we can. We're in section 46. Thank you.
Section 46 is for the Dalton Highway, $1.2 million related to the increased snowfall and ice control measures that the department has had to incur this winter.
Any discussion?
In the aviation program?
It's in the highways and aviation component, but it's really related to the highway activities.
How much of this is, Mr. Chairman, how much of this is still anticipated, like for the any more snowfall from March and April?
The estimate of the $1.2 million, is my understanding, is for the cost that they've incurred for the storms to date. But one thing that when they are estimating what to spend between now and June 30th, they are making that estimation based on a level of service of receiving the $1.2 million. If they were to not receive the full supplemental, it would result in either on the Dalton Highway or other parts of Interior Region a lower level of snow removal service than we've been providing in the past several years.
Any other questions? Okay, 47.
47 is to ratify some prior year. I'll back up. In 1977, the Division of Finance provided the department with a supply and inventory asset account. And basically, it's kind of like an advance in general fund dollars. And as supplies are used, then the department bills out to the user, like if the supply room downstairs billed each of you individually for the supplies you used. There was no mechanism to account for spoilage or breakage. Then there was the changeover in the counting system. So they've had a number of problems and not necessarily good internal controls and inventory controls, and it's led to an imbalance in the records. They now put in place procedures to deal with this so it doesn't happen in the future, and they are doing on-site actual inventories now. Quarterly reconciliation, so they've got some process set in place to fix this problem. But in the meantime, we're asking for a ratification, and it's about $715,000, I think, or from 1985 to 1992 that needs the legislature's approval of ratifying what has happened over those years.
Okay, 48.
Okay, 48 extends the FY93 operating budget lapse date for maintenance and operations appropriation this year so they can use the current year appropriation into the early summer months if they have some money left over.
Any questions? Okay, we move to DEC.
Okay, thanks, Bob. DEC Seafood, this is to $351,000 to replace unrealized program receipts in the Seafood and Sanitation Activities. The department last Friday finally received approval to implement regulations to collect these fees. The legislature, when it provided the increased fee authority, based it on a full fiscal year. We're three-fourths through it already. They've not been able to realize these increased fees. So this replaces about $351,000 worth of those unrealized fees with straight general funds.
What is this going to do?
What
service are we going to provide for this 351?
It enabled them to do their inspection activities through the three-fourths of this fiscal year when they weren't collecting these program receipts. Now they're going to collect about $107,000 in program receipts this year, but they haven't been able to collect for the full year's activities.
Is that the increased fees that just recently took effect?
Correct, last Friday.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do we have any information as to... Well, I guess I better get more detailed information before I ask you the question. But the question goes something like this. Some of the fees are just reviewing, say, engineers or surveyors' on-site work. And it takes the engineer about an hour to put it together. What takes DEC $250 worth of time then to review that hour's worth of work was the question that was brought to me in regards to the on-site fees and so forth, that they didn't mind paying what was a fair cost, but they thought some of the fees were much higher than what the cost of the service really should have been. I'll get more information, though, and let you know.
Okay,
number 50.
Section 50 provides $109,900 for paralytic shellfish poison inspection. Okay.
Any questions on that one? I don't know what it is, but for $109,000.
Is it commercial?
Yeah. Representative Terrio?
Cheryl, is that the increased amount that's needed because of finding PSP in the crab?
Correct, last summer. That's correct.
Okay, 51.
51 is $41,400 for the Water Quality Standards Advisory Group. These are meeting costs associated with this group that the department put together at the request of the governor in order to get more public participation in development of water quality standards.
Does the governor have $41,400 in his supplemental or in his contingency fund?
No.
No?
No. That same question came up on the other body.
I thought he had 370-some thousand left.
But left or altogether? I could verify what the balance is.
Maybe it was to roll forward. I don't know.
I could verify what the balance is.
Sure. I'm pulling your arm a little bit today. 52.
52 is $300,000 for the new borough of Yakutat. By statute, we have to provide the first-year organizational grants as well as the second and third, but this is the first year for Yakutat.
Any questions? 53.
Revenue sharing underpayment for the Central Mat-Su and Greater Palmer Fire Service Areas. When they calculated and made the payments originally, the department used incorrect population figures. And as a result, these two organizations were underfunded, and the money's gone out. And so this will make these two organizations whole in this current year.
Okay, it's either this or prorate to everyone else. Is that what it is, or has everyone else already been paid?
They've already been paid.
Any questions? 54, corrections.
54 is the Department of Corrections. Almost $6.9 million.
That is going under scrutiny. Do we have any questions on that at this time? 55.
55, University of Alaska Fairbanks, snow removal, $375,000. This is again related to increased snowfall this year. They've had to incur a lot of overtime because they have a lot of flat roof buildings and they have to get it off so that the roofs don't collapse.
Doesn't snow in Fairbanks though?
Some years more than others.
Oh. mental health trust case law clerk. That's a good one.
Yeah.
It's assistance to Judge Green to get some of the backlog paperwork. Mm-hmm. Any questions on that one? 57.
57 is miscellaneous claims and stale dated warrants for the various departments. And if anybody has questions, we have details on all of those.
And these are things that have been already paid, and this is to settle up the account.
Yeah, either stale dated warrants, they never cash the check in time, or the miscellaneous claims are billings that are more than 2 years old, so they have no mechanism to pay them, and they have not been paid.
Any questions on any of those? Representative Grusendorf.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Cheryl, when we're talking about number 37 here, ratification of many prior years' expenditures, and a few others that you say are of a bookkeeping nature. We will have information on that so we can take a look at as you did with 57, you said the miscellaneous claims.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, in the backup books that we provided the committee, there is documentation on the other ones on miscellaneous claims. I'll verify if we've sent that over. We have one full binder that has the documentation on miscellaneous claims and stale dated warrants. If you'd like that too, we'll send that over. But otherwise, there is information in the backup on
those. Any other questions? Okay, before we go, once again, I'm going to ask, especially the subcommittee chairman, and of course, all members of the finance committee are invited to a meeting in my office tomorrow, approximately 9:30 in the morning, just to do some kind of caretaking, see how we're coming with our subcommittees. We'll have Mr. Greeny to go over a reporting procedure. We're working on a common form to report off of, and anything else in that anyone would like to bring up, but that does not require a vote. It is a public meeting. Everyone's invited. Thank you. Anything else coming before the meeting today? Meeting's adjourned.